My guest today has starred in dozens of movies, TV series, and portrayed one of the most iconic characters of the 1980s. His work spans from parts in Miami Vice to Star Trek to playing Sherlock Holmes. He's gone on to be involved with environmental issues, voice Disney animation, and star in the hit film Watchmen. I'm very pleased to be joined by the man behind Max Headroom. It's the one and only Matt Frewer. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Matt.
How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for the introduction. I wasn't sure who you were talking about there. It was such a glowing report.
Well, you know, you've done quite a lot. It's been, what, 30 years now that you've been in the entertainment industry?
Yeah, just over, actually. I've been a long and winding road.
Has it gone quickly?
It really has. I often just kind of go, what happened? I mean, it really just seems like yesterday that I was at drama school at Bristol Old Vic, and full of piss and vinegar, and still full of piss and vinegar, but 30 years older.
You've done an awful lot in that time. You've done a lot of voice work as well as acting. Is there one that you prefer more than the other?
No, not really. I mean, I prefer on-camera work, but whatever I'm working on seems to be the favorite. I mean, obviously, there's standouts over the course of my career, but, you know, once you commit to doing a job, there's probably a reason for that, and very few of them end up going tits up, you know?
What's been your hardest audition, would you say?
My hardest audition?
Yeah, the one that you found most difficult, or, you know, you had to prepare for lots, or to get a role, you feel some sense of achievement because you had to go through a laborious process.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't really think of one specifically. I mean, I think they're all kind of difficult. I mean, it's a sort of a weird process, auditioning, but I guess it serves the purpose in lieu of something better coming along, you know?
Have you ever absolutely screwed one up, just thinking, oh, God.
Yeah, I think I have, but it was less about what I was doing in the audition and more about what I said to the director. It's funny that you mention it, because I was actually talking to my wife about that this morning, about this particular director in a particular movie, and it was quite a big movie, and we disagreed on how it should be played, and I remember saying to the director that I thought he was wrong. And as soon as I looked at the executive producer, he had a look in his eyes that said I'd lost the role. You know what I mean?
Now, we're going to be looking at your whole career and other interests that you've got, but arguably one of the biggest roles that you've done was the iconic 80s stuttering Max Headroom. Now, the complete series of Max Headroom, 20 Minutes into the Future, is being released on DVD in only a few weeks' time. Are you happy that Max is being reintroduced more than 20 years since you hung up your fiberglass suit?
Yeah, absolutely. I have nothing but fond memories of that character and playing that character in the experience of the movie and the series and the Coke commercials, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it was fantastic for me because it meant that I could come to L.A. and not have to pound pavement. I had this amazing calling card of playing a dual role in a high-profile series, so I didn't have to do any of the usual knocking on doors that you do when you arrive in L.A., so I'm very grateful to Max for that. You know, it was a great time.
So you found that people just came to you rather than you having to source out roles?
I wouldn't go so far as that. I mean, it wasn't as if Hollywood was sort of throwing itself at my
knocking on your door.
Yeah, it made life a lot easier, for sure.
Now, as Max, and you mentioned this, you famously did the Coke adverts in the 1980s. So in real life, are you a Coke or a Pepsi kind of guy?
Coke.
You're not just saying that because you're in some sort of life-bound agreement.
That's right. A lifetime in perpetuity.
Yeah.
No, I like Coke better. The stuff that I was hawking was New Coke, which this is a scoop for you, Matt. I was not a fan of. I felt as though it was so sweet, it really didn't taste sweet. It sort of had the consistency of fiberglass or something.
It's good that at least you had some sort of allegiance to the brand while you were doing it as Max. You know, it's always a good thing.
Yes, and I still do, 30 years on. God, what a company, man.
Now, interestingly, I've been watching some interviews. You were interviewed as Max Headroom, and so obviously you had to respond as Max Headroom and be
right.
As witty as Max Headroom.
A lot of it was improvised. It was pretty much all improvised.
That's really a tale to a very good actor because, you know, when watching these interviews, they're hilarious.
Oh, thanks, yeah.
And it's great to know that that's actually coming from yourself.
Yeah, well, there was a sort of basic structure to the interview, and definitely there was a few jokes built in, but we'd inevitably riff on something and expand it. So that's when it really became fun for me, is when you were suddenly tippy-toeing across the tightrope without a net, you know.
Did you have certain words that you had to say so that the tech crew could loop them to create the stutter?
Well, yeah, if we were doing a live event, we were using a vocoder, you know, basically like an electric organ, and, you know, I'd say, oh, Matt, I like your shirt, and then there'd be a guy in the wings playing on the vocoder, so it'd go, oh, Matt, I like your shirt.
So the actual stutter then, at least in the live interviews, was actually genuine?
Yeah, in some of the live events it was, yeah. And then obviously if it was pre-recorded, it was a situation where we do a little bit of frame grabbing, and it was one out of, I think they'd take one out of every 12 frames, and it gave it that little glitch.
It's a massive insight, because, I mean, even back in the 80s, people didn't even know whether it was real, whether it was a computer generated, whether it was an actor, you know, and to understand Max Headroom a lot more is fascinating.
Well, it's odd now. I mean, still people think that it was a computer generated man. I mean, that's how they remember it. And so if you kind of prick the balloon and go, no, it was a guy in a rubber suit. At that time in England, it took 4.5 hours to put on the prosthetics rubber makeup and 1.5 hours to take it off. They're confused and then sort of disappointed, you know. So, but I guess we wanted to perpetuate the ruse that Max was computer generated, and you know, otherwise anybody could make him.
With regards to like how long it actually took to get a makeup on and off, did you ever think about maybe going a bit public with it, walking down the street dressed as Max Headroom?
I did that once.
You did?
Enough, we were shooting at a, I can't even remember the name of the studio. It was somewhere in Hampstead, and I escaped and walked down the street. Almost caused a couple of accidents.
I can imagine. Did you ever try and bring it home to the wife? You know, see if she was...
that's right.
It could have worked, you know?
Safe computer-generated sex. I like it.
No need for condoms. It's perfect, right there.
That's it. I know, this is not a headpiece. It's a reservoir tip.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, anyone could potentially do it if it was actually computer-generated. But does that mean that the look of Max Headroom was purely based on you, or is it mainly prosthetics that created the actual physical look of Max Headroom?
No, the look was based on me, and it's a sort of an accentuated version of me. I mean, my high forehead is higher, my steam shovel jaws more steam shovel-y, and, you know, I mean, the idea was that we wanted Max to kind of look like a blandly handsome transatlantic, mid-Atlantic, 24-hour-a-day broadcaster with a few little rubber tweaks of my own features, and that became possible.
You mentioned that, you know, you obviously did interviewing as well as being the interviewee. So out of all the people, and you did play an interviewer for an awful lot of people and a whole host of stars, who was your favorite?
There were quite a few. Tina Turner was fantastic. We did this one that we shot in London called Max Headroom's Christmas Box, and Tina Turner came on. She's got a lot of fun. Michael Caine was great. Oliver Reed was a lot of fun. He was great, and how you'd expect in terms of inebriation level, but it was a lot of fun. He was a great guy.
Did you actually get to meet these people, or was it?
Oh, yeah. It was great fun, actually. And, you know, if they were being whisked away in a limo after the interview, they'd inevitably come into the dressing room afterwards, so you'd get this sort of weird thing where rubber man meets real person or real celebrity, if that's not an oxymoron. And it was great.
You said that Tina Turner was great. Did you ever manage to try and sing with her? Because you did actually do a bit of singing.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did a little duet together, as I recall.
Wow. So what's your favorite song, then?
My favorite song?
Mm.
You mean that Max did?
No, that you, as Matt Frewer, what's your favorite song?
What's your favorite hobby? Volleyball, needlepoint, what do you do? What's your favorite color? My favorite song of all time.
I'll tell you what. Don't tell me. Sing it for me. I know you can sing.
Forget it.
No, go on. Give me a chorus.
Come on. what's my favorite song? I have a lot of favorite songs. I don't know. I love Irving Berlin.
Okay, that's
what that'll do.
That'll do.
I love all those cheek to cheek and all those, you know, heaven. I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly sleep. You know, all that
stuff. That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. Crooning. I love crooners.
Can I hire you for bar mitzvahs or weddings or anything like that? Now, one of the other things I'm quite interested in is memorabilia. I'm a collector myself. I collect various things. And I was just wondering, out of your career, whether it's Max or anyone else, do you have any memorabilia that you've kept around your house?
I have drawers full of old Max Headroom albums and stuff, you know, all that paranoia stuff. Mm-hmm. I have T-shirts, posters, and all that kind of stuff.
Did you get to keep the mask? Any prosthetics?
No, because after it's used, it's pretty much trashed. You know, once they pull it off, it looks like a deflated tennis ball.
What about the suit, though? It was fiberglass, wasn't it?
Yeah. They're in mothballs for Max's comeback.
Is there a Max comeback?
There might be something in the wind.
Go on, give me an exclusive.
No scoops.
Ah.
No, because it's not a done deal yet, and it's not a sure thing, but everyone lies in wait and is hopeful, so we'll see.
That was actually going to be one of the things I was going to ask you. You know, what the future is for you now. Where are you going to go? What are you looking to do?
There's a couple things floating around that I may be doing next. I'll probably be going back onto the show that I work on called Eureka. It's a kind of a sci-fi show. It's a lot of fun to do, and there's a couple other things floating around, so we'll see.
You've done quite a lot of sci-fi stuff with Eureka, and you've been in Star Trek and things like this. Would you say that you seek out these types of roles? Are you a big sci-fi fan?
No, I think they sort of tend to find me. I mean, I enjoy doing them because it definitely puts the characters that you're playing in extreme circumstances, and that's always fun to do. You know, how do you react when you're confronted by the alien? And that kind of stuff is intriguing to do. I like the sort of science fantasy angle, too. I just finished an updated version of Alice in Wonderland, which is good fun, with Kathy Bates as the Queen of Hearts, and I was the White Knight, and that kind of stuff is a lot of fun to do.
One of the roles that you've done was in Star Trek. Did you find a legion of Trekkies following you after that?
Well, there's a lot of Trekkies that do recognize that I was in that episode. When they suddenly approach you in a restaurant and start quoting lines from an episode of a science fiction show that you forgot that you'd done, it's a little disconcerting.
Did that happen in the 80s with Max Headroom?
You know, Max was obviously the kind of high-profile character that, you know, made the cover of Newsweek. You're hidden behind the rubber, and there's a certain kind of anonymity which has its pluses and minuses. The thumbs-up version would be, you know, I wasn't so identified with the character that I couldn't be considered for other roles. The thumbs-down thing is that your ego takes a beating, and you're kind of going, hey, wait a minute, that's me there. You know, I want the credit, you know. So it was bittersweet, shall we say.
I can imagine. You represented one of the most technological icons of the 20th century. But how gadget-orientated are you?
I am technically inept.
Well, let's try for you.
Don't do this to me, Matt. My expertise on my computer extends to email, and that's about it.
Okay, well, let's just try a few rundowns and let's see. Yes or no. Facebook?
No.
iPhone?
No.
Twitter?
Nope.
iPod?
No way.
Blog?
Nope.
Have you got a flat screen TV?
No.
Really?
No.
Blu-ray?
Nope.
Any games consoles?
No.
A digital camera?
My daughter has a digital camera.
Okay.
But I don't know how to use it. honestly, I've been dragged kicking and screaming into the 21st century. I'm more of a kind of two soup cans and a length of string kind of guy. I'd be happy to dial it back to that. I should be an Amish farmer.
Do you still have a VHS player?
No, I'm not that bad. But I do know where it is. It's in the basement somewhere. As all the remnants of the 80s are, right?
Is your basement kind of a homage to the era?
Yeah, it's a pantheon to the good old days.
Yeah? Would you say it's your favorite era?
Only in hindsight. I think when we were going through it, we all went, ooh, bad hair, bad clothes, you know?
Have you seen any 3D movies?
You know, it doesn't really work for me. And I'll tell you why. Because I had a detached retina in my right eye. And for some reason, the 3D just won't work. It won't lift the image off the screen. So I actually went to see Avatar with a couple of friends, and they were talking me through it, you know, kind of going, oh, the pterodactyl's just above your head now. You know, I had no idea what they were talking about.
This has been great. You've really opened my eyes to knowing a lot more about your career, about Max Headroom, you know, even tantalized with the idea that you may be jumping at the chance to play Max Headroom again, which is incredibly exciting. Just out of interest, because you were in these digital TV ads a couple of years ago as an old Max Headroom.
That's right, yeah.
So do you think if Max Headroom was to rear his head again, that it'd be an older Max Headroom, or do you think with the prosthetics you'd be able to pull off what he looked like back in 1985?
I think I'd rather go back to what Max looked like in 1985. People should remember Max more without the liver spots.
There was a lot of them.
I know, you could kind of play join the dots on his forehead there. I thought it was a bit much, but it served the purpose, you know.
When you had to put all that makeup on and all the prosthetics on and everything like this for the new Max Headroom a few years ago, was that like stepping back in time a little bit?
Well, you know, it was weird because just before the cameras rolled, I remember thinking, God, I haven't done this in over 20 years. And then as soon as the cameras rolled, I instantly went back in it. I mean, it was like the fastest time warp ever. It was very odd.
Okay, well, look, one last question for you. How would you say you've contributed to the good of mankind?
Oh, God. Save the big ones for last. Well, you know, Max, I think, must be honest, there's lots of people working on it, you know, writers, technicians, directors, producers, and costumers and makeup people. everyone was a contributing factor to that character and the iconic nature of it. And I like to think that Max changed the face of television, for good or bad. The character actually achieved that, so, and I'm very proud to be part of that.
Well, you've definitely set your place in history, that is for sure. Matt, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to me today. You've been a fabulous guest, Matt. It's been tremendous to talk to you. And in all honesty, it's been kind of like living a dream for me, because you've been such a huge icon to so many people. And I've been a massive fan of Max Headroom and your work for such a long time. So I'd really like to thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome, Matt. Thanks a lot. That's very kind of you to say.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.